Martin LeClaire, Chief Investment Officer and Portfolio Manager at Barrick Yard Advisors, is here, and we're talking stocks now in the Money Life Market Call. Welcome to the Market Call, the part of the show where we talk with experienced money managers about how they do their job, what they look for that determines what they're buying and selling, what they see happening broadly on the market, and how they are putting it all together. And my guest today is Martin LeClaire. He's Chief Investment Officer and Portfolio Manager at Barrick Yard Advisors. And if you're familiar with him, then you're glad he's back, because we get a lot of comments when he's here. You guys like his methodology. It seems to resonate with you. And if you've never heard from him, well, you're in for a treat. If you want to take that treat a little bit further and explore more about what he does and what the firm does, go to BarrickYard.com. And as long as you're doing that, follow along on Twitter at BarrickYard. Martin LeClaire, it's great to have you back on Money Life.
Chuck, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Martin is here on the Gainbridge Hotline. Gainbridge believes that deferred fixed annuities are a steady, guaranteed way to grow savings. Its innovative self-managed digital platform provides direct access to trusted annuity products without complexity or hidden fees. Learn more at gainbridge.life. Marty, we always start with methodology. And like I said, you've got one that seems to resonate with my audience, but refresh them for those who maybe are new or those who don't quite recall it.
Sure, pleasure, Chuck. I would say it can be synthesized down into about three different areas. Number one, there was a popular movie about 20 years ago about a shady sports agent called Jerry Maguire. And if you saw the movie, you might remember there's a cute little kid in it, but everyone remembers the line, "Show me the cash." And so number one is, show us the cash. We always and everywhere view the investment process is understanding where the cash is coming from the asset, where it perhaps may be going, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of investments, or so-called investments, we would call them speculation, really don't have cash. You know, they could be high-tech companies that are very, very loss-making. So we focus in the world of assets that generate cash. Number two, we own businesses. We think in terms of when we buy an asset, we're buying a piece of a business. We're not buying the stock market. Finance has become a little bit bizarre in the sense that there are a lot of investment philosophies that are based upon the premise that returns come from the stock market. Returns do not come from the stock market. Returns come from businesses and the reinvestment of and the compounding of the cash that those businesses generate. Stock markets could close tomorrow, and your businesses would still be worth quite a bit of money. It's a little bit like saying your house has no value because it's not traded on the New York Stock Exchange. And then number three, we focus on predictive behaviors. Predictive behaviors both in terms of the kinds of assets we own and we buy, predictive behaviors in terms of really understanding how investing works. For example, investing in the stock market is a gamble in the short run. And the reason why I say that is because we know from studies at Yale University that 90% of the move in the stock market in any given year has to do with changing investor sentiment. Only 10% has to do with economic foundations. Now, in the long term, investing is not a gamble because your long-term return will pretty much mirror how well the businesses you own do over the very long term. Another part of predictive behaviors is thinking in terms of one's own temperament. We are hardwired at birth to be lousy investors. When anything happens to us, our gut instinct, if it's a negative, is to run away. In investing, that's a deadly sin. So one has to understand that you can be your own worst enemy. Warren Buffett's teacher, a guy named Benjamin Graham, who's written several books and who I admire a lot, and I've read everything he wrote. He died about 50 years ago. He talks about having rarefied information, having, you know, MBAs, being a finance professor, all those sorts of wonderful technical skills mean nothing if you don't have the right temperament. And he talks about having dealt with people who don't really know much about finance who have done well over time because they were temperamentally well suited to owning businesses. So I could go into more, but I think that kind of maybe gives a framework. You know, we very much focus on the power of compounding, and the only way you can benefit from compounding is by being a long-term investor. There's another thing that we focus on called the paradox of investing. Everyone, unless they want to outlive their money, by definition, are long-term investors. But so often, we manage the short-term concerns and not long-term.
I want to point out that we can sum up your philosophy this way.
Yes, sir. Can't argue with cash.
You can't argue with cash. You don't argue with cash. But I will argue with your citation of Jerry Maguire, because he says,
show me the money.
That's exactly right. It's show me the money.
Show me the money!
We will be yelling, show me the money. But in showing you the cash right now and avoiding the short-term concerns, I mean, we got a market that the first quarter, a lot worse than I think most people were expecting this year. Who the heck knows? I mean, it would be a great year and a great run if we got back to having a flat year, but there's so many different concerns. So where are you finding the cash generators? Are they the same companies? In other words, you know, you talk about the long-term concerns. If you and I had been having this conversation 6 months ago, looking into 2022, would you have been looking at the exact same opportunities then as you are now, or have these market conditions changed anything?
Well, there have been some changes in terms of the way that we look at things. For more than a year, and you know, this is all written down, I identified that we were in a bubble just over a year ago. And there was no income in fixed income. Credit standards were lax. The stock market was priced to deliver and continues to be priced to deliver disappointing returns probably for the next 10 or 15 years. In history, there have been times when the stock market over a 10 or 15 or 20 year period hasn't done anything. Most recently from the late 1990s until 2013. So we're in a bubble. Real estate is also, in a bubble. Residential real estate, the affordability right now is worse than it was back in 06. And other types of real estate, they're what we call being on the wrong side of the capital markets. So the strategy has been to live outside the bubble. And that hasn't changed. What we've done is added to that framework a new framework, which is two major themes that we're convinced will be happening. Number one is deglobalization. So all things being equal, it's time to buy companies in the United States that do a lot of the business in the United States. And number two, inflation. Now, nobody, let me just state this first of all. I have no particular insight regarding inflation. And I hate to break it to you, but nobody else does either. Nobody knows what inflation, the causes, there are theories, but inflation could be a problem, or maybe not. Maybe we'll go back in a few years from now once the logistics and the supply chains go back to normal. But inflation is also a theme of ours, and so that has led us to some new types of investments. And then the third thing, we always focus on how the world will be the same in 10 or 15 years from now. And that's where our focus has been.
Well, let's talk about some of those names. What is making the cut right now and is kind of an exemplar for your investment style?
Well, first of all, living outside the bubble, the poster child for that would be these holding companies. These are typically repositories of great fortunes, the publicly traded companies that invest in other businesses. And in terms of predictive attributes, the people who run these businesses tend to own a huge amount of the stock. So insider ownership, that's a huge long-term predictive behavior. Secondly, they're trading at big discounts to their net asset value. So if you were to liquidate the business, the two I'm going to mention today are trading at more than a 35% discount to what they're valued at. And thirdly, they have an excellent track record in terms of capital allocation. And that's another predictive behavior. So an example here in the United States is Graham Holdings. The Graham family down here in Washington, D.C., has a publicly traded business called Graham Holdings. The stock's trading at 30% discount to its book value. And it doesn't screen well because they tend to spin off businesses. But over the last 10 or 15 years, they have grown at a rate higher than the stock market. But, you know, it's trading at a big discount. Another one in Europe is Exor. Exor is the holding company for the Agnelli family, which is one of the top families in Italy. And they own businesses, everything from Ferrari to CNH Industrial, which is a competitor to John Deere. They own, for example, Case, New Holland, and so forth. And then they have a lot of private equity investments as well. They own The Economist magazine, Christian Louboutin, the high-end women's shoe company, and so forth. So those would be examples of living outside the bubble and owning assets on the cheap. In terms of inflation, what we like to do are own companies which are asset light, or they are involved with the royalty models, or they're toll takers. With a toll taker, it means you have an asset. So long as that asset doesn't require a lot of capital maintained, these are good inflation hedges. So an example there in terms of royalty companies in biotechnology, there's a company called Royalty Pharma. They control about 55% of the market. The number two player is about 5 or 6%, and it's trading on a free cash flow yield of about 13%. So that would be an example of a royalty company.
Very, very quickly, what makes you sell? If you're not arguing with the cash, you're looking for that, what ultimately makes you say time to get out?
Usually it's price, because you want to find a company that's run by an excellent capital allocator, and then you want to let compounding take care of its magic. And so typically, if an asset becomes ridiculously expensive relative to its free cash flow yield, or alternatively, if we make a mistake, you know, you can make mistakes in investments. Everyone does. And so we'll sell if we feel like we've made a mistake.
Now we're going to get your quick and dirty take on some stocks my audience is particularly interested in.
Quick and dirty.
Always account for variable change.
Well, the variables may be changing, but the methodology stays the same. You're not arguing with cash. You're trying to avoid those mistakes. And we're doing all of that with Martin LeClaire, Chief Investment Officer and Portfolio Manager at Barrick Yard Advisors. BarrickYard.com, the website. We're a bit late getting to Quick and Dirty, so we're going to jump straight in. We're going to start with a request we got from Jake in Chicago. And I just want to point out, Jake, when we were putting together the new list, you said, I'm only sending you 4 requests. We have no more requests of yours on the list because we've gotten them all in interviews. Jake wanted to know about Weyerhaeuser Company. It's ticker WY.
So Weyerhaeuser has benefited from the huge increase in the price of lumber that everyone knows about. I would not own a Weyerhaeuser. It's really recovered from its lows from the 2 years ago. The bottom line is they don't even earn their cost of capital. So basically, think of it this way, over any three-year period, when they make an investment, the return they get on that investment is below what the cost of the capital is. And it's not a good thing.
So although it has recovered, WY Weyerhaeuser is a sell or an avoid.
It's topped out. I say we sell now.
Our next 2 requests involve Richard in Chula Vista, California. The first he shares with Rich in Orchard Beach, Maryland. It's WPC, WP Carey Incorporated.
WP Carey is an excellent commercial real estate firm, and they have a management company. The problem is what I called earlier is the capital cycle. There's overinvestment in the commercial real estate market. I mean, it's a good company, but I think that the inventory headwinds are going to last for many, many years. That's number one. So there's overbuilding. And number two is interest rates. You know, there's a real risk that we're at the beginning of a new increase in interest rate cycle, which could last for a generation. And if that's the case, that's going to be another headwind. And it's not a particularly cheap asset, so I would not own it.
So it's good company, but bad stock. That's why we're sounding the warning.
Warning, warning, warning.
On WP Carey Incorporated, WPC. The second request from Richard in Chula Vista, California is Kraft Heinz Company, KHC.
if inflation is for real and it's a new headwind, then I think you don't want to own a highly levered packaged foods company. In the short term, they've been able to raise prices, but at some point, inflation is going to not make their business more valuable, but less valuable, because they're going to have to run up against increased costs on their end. I know Warren Buffett has a big position, but I wouldn't own Kraft Heinz either.
And now for the profit taking.
That's a sell ahead of the inflation push on Kraft Heinz KHC. Our last two requests involve Lance in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. The first, FNV Franco-Nevada Corp.
Franco-Nevada is a royalty company, so it very much fits into the model of a royalty company, and they're the best royalty company in the precious metals space. It's a bit expensive. If you have a long-term view, you know, you could still buy it at this level. I mean, I personally and all my clients own it. You know, you could wait for a little bit of a pullback or ease into it, but I think it's a good long-term investment. It's a quality company. They have no financial debt.
It's a hold to a buy. In other words, you love the company. You're waiting for a slightly better entry point on FNV Franco-Nevada Corp.
I'm just taking my time before making the move.
And last, Lance in Bethlehem wanted to know, along with Mark in Mitchell, South Dakota, about CBOE Global Markets. That's CBOE.
We own CBOE. It's a toll taker business model, and it does not require a lot of capital to run it. So it's an inflation hedge. It's also, if volatility spikes and continues to, that plays to them. They will benefit from spikes in volatility and uncertainty. It's a little bit expensive in terms of where it's selling relative to its earnings, but it's a growth stock. It's a quality business. They're going to be around. I think CBOE is a buy.
We were wondering if we were going to get one, but we did.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
That's a buy on CBOE Global Markets, CBOE. And I knew we'd have at least one good buy to talk about. Not because Martin always wants to do it, but because we've come to the point where we have to say goodbye to Martin LeClaire. But Marty, it's always great to have you on the show. Thanks so much for doing this. We'll talk to you again down the line.
Thanks, Chuck.
That's Martin LeClaire, the Chief Investment Officer and Portfolio Manager at Barrick Yard Advisors. BarrickYard.com, the website, on Twitter at Barrick Yard. Where you've got the finish line in sight, but we'll tell you what's coming for the rest of the week before we cross it next.